You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3, Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. Archives of the show can be found online at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us for contact at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. This week's show, we rebroadcast an interview from 2013 with Crow, a.k.a. Katie Cloth, followed by recent metal, death rock, and punk from around the world. Crow's an environmental and indigenous rights activist. At the time of the original interview, Crow had been facing charges stemming from a protest where eco-activists found workers from Global Taconite, a mineral mining company, attempting to extract iron ore from the hills of Iron County, Wisconsin, secretly test drilling. Crow was charged with throwing a worker's camera away and minor assault charge, which was caught on video. A link to the video will be included in this episode's blog post. Crow was sentenced to 9 months in jail this January 2015. In addition, according to the Ashland Daily Press, Crow will have a 5-year probation with the felony charge and 2 years of with the misdemeanor, including a work release where they'll be pressed to work a full-time job as a way of normalizing them and their activities, otherwise known as domestication. Crow is now also facing charges from District Attorney Martin Lipsky of bail jumping for allegedly participating in an anniversary protest in the, quote, forbidden zone, unquote, in the Pinoki Range controlled by Global Taconite, along with 45 other people. Lipsky appears to have it out for Crow, who had initially filed charges that could have resulted in a 15-year sentence for Crow. After the conversation with Crow, I'll read their post-sentencing statement. For more on this case, check out pinokidefenders.wordpress.com. You can write to Crow at Katie Cloth, that's K-L-O-T-H, Iron County Jail, 300 Taconite Street, T-A-C-O-N-I-T-E, Hurley, H-U-R-L-E-Y, Wisconsin, 54534. And here's an announcement I'm happy to be making. Insurrectionary anarchist prisoners in Mexico, Amelie, Fallon, and Carlos, were all released on March 13, 2015. They were charged with a Molotov attack January 5th, 2014 on a Nissan dealership and the neighboring governmental offices of the Mexican Department of Transportation and Communication, and had faced serious charges relating to terrorism because people were in the government building at the time. The three were collectively known as the 5E3. Amelie and Fallon, both Quebecois, were deported back to Canada. We're happy that they've been able to rejoin their friends and loved ones, and that Carlos Lopez Martin is with his child. To hear some words from Amelie and Fallon at the time, while they were imprisoned in Mexico, check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org and search 5E3. Also of note in prison-related things, from Lucasville Amnesty, on Monday, March 16th, over 30 Supermax prisoners at Ohio State Penitentiary went on hunger strike. Warden Jay Forshee and OSP staff are refusing to meet their demands or negotiate with them. Some of the hunger strikers have not been met and consulted with regarding their demands. 11 prisoners remain on hunger strike and are committed to staying through to the end if necessary. Two recent policy changes at OSP are the main issues, though prisoners have many specific other grievances. The biggest issue affecting the most prisoners is the withdrawal of congregate recreation. All but the cadre and long-timer prisoners at OSP are no longer allowed out on the range together for their 1-hour-a-day recreation out of their cells. This policy change reduces human contact between prisoners, isolating and dehumanizing them, and denying them opportunities to demonstrate that they are not security threats, a key component of security step-down process they need to go through to get out of solitary confinement. It also creates a logistical problem if only one prisoner is out at a time for rec. There's not enough time in a week for each of the 450 prisoners to get their legally required 5 hours of rec time per week. This policy change violates court decisions that are supposed to bind OSP to a minimum standard of humane treatment. The second change, OSP has decided to deny programming to prisoners at level 5B. This directly affects a few dozen prisoners who are at the highest level of security in the Ohio system. Depriving these prisoners of access to programming demonstrates the ODRC's commitment to cruelty and punishment rather than rehabilitation and counseling for their captives. Like the recreation restriction, it slows the process by which 5B prisoners can step down to lower security levels, acquiring more privileges. It is also illegal. Some of the denied programming includes religious programming. Any prisoner placed on Level 5B will be there for at least a year. It is a violation of the First Amendment right to freedom of religion to deny anyone the ability to practice their religion for over a year, and a violation of the 14th Amendment equal protection under the law to exclude these prisoners from opportunities afforded to other prisoners without just cause. There are many other issues at OSP, everything from unsafe and slippery conditions in the showers that have caused multiple injuries to restricted access to hardcover books in violation of U.S. Supreme Court decision Turner v. Safely. The warden at OSP is not taking prisoners' demands seriously and appears to not have consulted ODRC legal services before instituting these illegal and unconstitutional policy changes. That's why the folks at Lucasville Amnesty are requesting folks to call Trainwreck Trevor Clark and Austin Stout at the ODRC Legal Services Department. You can find more information and how to support the prisoners in their ongoing hunger strikes at lucasvilleamnesty.org.
Evangelist Creflo Dollar has given me a fantastic idea that I really need to share with you, especially if you have money. Creflo Dollar runs a megachurch in Atlanta and recently opened a franchise of his megachurch in New York. For anyone unfamiliar, a megachurch is to a regular church what supersized fry are to a regular mundane fry. Reverend Dollar doesn't preach about Jesus to his megachurch members. He preaches about mega-Jesus. I don't know much about mega-Jesus, but I imagine if mega-Jesus and boring old son of Mary and Joseph Jesus got into a fight, mega-Jesus would hand mundane Jesus his ass. That's my guess. I think Creflo Dollar's franchise in New York has a drive-thru. Not sure. Can I get some Jesus, please? And supersize him. I said supersize, not circumcise. So anyway, this Creflo Dollar character with his mega Jesus recently posted a request to his mega church's mega site. He aims to turn the entire world into his super duper uber mega ultra hyper turbo church. He asked mega church members to donate $65 million so he can buy a G650 jet, referenced in popular music as a G6. Creflo Dollar needs to buy a G6. See, Mega Jesus, despite all of his superpower, has managed to generate very little revenue all on his own. So, to get out the mega message, Mega Jesus needs Creflo Dollar to get a $65 million celebrity jet and go zooming around the globe. You know, because there are such huge areas of the world that haven't yet heard of Mega Jesus. And clearly, there are billions who have not experienced the prosperity that Mega Jesus and Creflo Dollar have been promising. In fact, if we didn't know better, we'd almost think this whole Christianity program was a complete swindle keeping the poor of the world under control, while the Creflo Dollars burn up their ozone with designer jet. You'd almost think. But whatever you think about Creflo Dollars' version of the good news message, I think he's got a fantastic idea on how to deliver it. And if Creflo Dollar can employ Air Flight to deliver the good news that everyone needs Jesus, then why can't we anarchists employ Air Flight to deliver the great news that actually nobody needs them at all? I was pondering this out in the open prison yard. Look, from here, confined at a maximum security prison, I'm able to spread the great news of anarchy and insurrection and direct action to a limited audience. But there are plenty of places in the world where folks are completely unaware of our liberation theory, many of them living in nation states that have no extradition treaty with the United States. Not that that matters. And I firmly believe that I'm the perfect anarchist evangelist to serve the mission of spreading the great news. I'm volunteering. Somebody's got to do it. Of course, I'm not thinking quite so extravagantly as the megachurchy. I don't need a G6. I don't think I even need a plane. I think a helicopter would do the trick. A used one. At SeanSwain.org, we looked into the market for used helicopters. We found one for sale by an owner who got the helicopter from Cambodia, slightly damaged. From the photos, none of the bullet holes appear to have affected any of the central components. It can be repaired, it appears, with a little duct tape and a can of spray paint. This is my thinking. To follow in Creflo Dollar's footsteps, or should I say his airspace, I'd need a helicopter, two rolls of duct tape, a few AR-15 rifles with a full complement of ammunition, a rope ladder, a first aid kit, a few cases of RC Cola with several bags of cheese puffs, 6 gallons of orange juice, a sewing kit in case natives can shoot straighter than they look like they can, some extra cash for refueling, unless we intend to steal the gas, at which time we'll need a stockpile of more ammunition, a boom box with the entire collection of Rage Against the Machine, batteries for the boom box, 2 more rolls of duct tape, you can never have too much duct tape, and an I'm Not Johnny Ramone t-shirt for my public appearances. Oh yeah, we'll need an inflatable raft just in case the Coast Guard gets us on radar. You just never know. As far as facilities for where we stay, we'll worry about that if we ever make it out of U.S. airspace alive. And anyway, we don't need $65 million. All we need to start my global tour for the anarchist insurrection is $86,423.14. That's all. So, we need your donation. If you have money, feel free to donate online at SeanSwain.org. Or if you want to send cash, send it to Ben Turk at the address we'll provide at the site. Just wrap it up in tinfoil so mail workers won't steal it. And be sure to notify Ben that this is for my helicopter. Otherwise, he may just order a lot of pizza with your money. Trust me, Ben can put away some pizza. That's $86,423.14. That's our goal. A small price to pay for financing a global tour promoting the anarchist insurrection in countries with no extradition treaty with the United States. We also need a few volunteers as travel companions. You must be able to use automatic rifles effectively and know how to tie a tourniquet. Things just might get hectic. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility at Lucasville. If you're laying down grazing fire, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at his new address at Sean Swain 243-205, P.O. Box 45699, 1724 State Route number 728, Lucasville, Ohio 45699. To read some of Sean's writing and learn more about his case, check out seanswain.org.
Of the land. The idea is strange to us. If we do not own the freshness of the air and the sparkle of the water, how can you buy them? Every part of the earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every clearing and humming insect is holy in our memory and experience. The sap which courses through the trees carries our memories. We are part of the earth and it is part of us. We know that the white man does not understand our ways. One portion of land is the same to him as the next, for he is a stranger who comes in the night and takes from the land whatever he needs. The earth is not his brother, but his enemy. And when he has conquered it, he moves on. He leaves his father's graves behind, and he does not care. He kidnaps the earth from his children, and he does not care. His father's grave and his children's birthright are forgotten. He treats his mother, the earth, and his father, the sky, as things to be bought, plundered, or sold like sheep or bright beads. His appetite will devour the earth and leave behind only a desert. I do not know. Our ways are different from your ways. The sight of your cities pains my eyes. There is no quiet place in the white man's cities. No place to hear the unfurling of leaves in spring or the rustle of an insect's wings. The clatter only seems to insult the ears. And what is there to life if one cannot hear the lonely cry of the lapwing or the arguments of the frogs around the pond at night? What is man without the other animals? If all the beasts were gone, man would die for a great loneliness of spirit. For whatever happens to the beast soon happens to man. All things are connected. Teach your children what we have taught our children, that the earth is our mother. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. Man did not weave the web of life. He's merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself.
We're speaking with Crow, an activist working to defend an area in northern Wisconsin known as the Pinoki Hills from the creation of an open-pit iron mine. The iron mine is a venture of a company called Göbek Taconite. Thanks for coming on the show, Crow.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell listeners about the area you inhabit? How would you describe the environment of your part of northern Wisconsin?
Northern Wisconsin. It's one of the more elevated areas. It's really beautiful. It's more rural. Not a lot of big towns. There's a lot of indigenous reservations around here. Basically, the Pinoki Hills are pretty important to a lot of folks, and different people see them in different ways. It's a sacred space to some. It's also, more literally, it's the recharge zone for all the water north of the hills, including Bayfield, Ashland, Red Cliff Reservation, and the Bad River Band of Ojibwe Reservation. There's seven major rivers that run out of this area that's speckled beautifully with tons of beautiful hardwoods like sugar maples and ironwood used to make like wigwams. And this area also yields really fertile soil full of leeks and really sensitive plants like the endangered lady slipper. And basically, some people like go get a taconite that don't recognize or respect all the creatures, human and non, that live and depend on this land and watershed, and why it's important. They want to turn it into the world's largest open pit taconite mine, because it's what is now known as the last, or yeah, now the largest reserve of iron ore in North America. So some people are fighting to protect this space, and some people are fighting to destroy it. So it's an interesting place to be right now.
So I'd imagine that an open pit mine sounds like, or looks like, just what it sounds like. What would it look like, and what does it threaten to do to the Pinokis?
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, it looks like what it sounds. Open pit, in its finality, it'd be approximately 22 miles long, blowing the tops literally off of these 500, 600 foot hills. And in spots, its range is anywhere from a half mile to a mile and a half wide. So it would totally change the landscape out here. And as I alluded to, the water bodies that run through here, that is part of the water that a lot of creatures and humans drink. Because there's known sulfides and pyrites in the soil, when it's exposed to oxygen and water, so when it's taken out of the ground, or blown out, especially when the tops of the hills are blown off, it turns into sulfuric acid, and it will inevitably, and already has a little bit from their test drilling, possibly irreversibly damage the water with sulfuric acid, which is poisonous and would kill a lot of crops like wild rice and be permanently in the water that plants live off of and all creatures depend on.
We were talking earlier, and you mentioned the wild rice, and you mentioned the relationship between the Ojibwe Bad River tribe and the wild rice harvest. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, a lot of people up here can and do still live very subsistently. Wild rice is a staple, and it's also a filter crop, so it's a wetland plant. And up here, where the Bad River Reservation, where the Bad River that's connected to the Tyler Forks, which is connected to the Pinoki Hills, where they want to like mine and get sulfuric acid in the water, without a doubt. It's home to 40% of Lake Superior's wetlands. It's the world's or nature's natural wastewater treatment plant. So they're eating this rice as a staple food, and it's something that's sacred to them. Part of their creation story is they stop where the food grows on the water, which is the wild rice. So they stopped here in this region. So their whole culture is entirely based on this land base, and they have nowhere else to go. And they're basically fighting for like the scraps of wilderness that are left in the Midwest here. And that's not just like their culture and their creation story. Like you asked and said, it's their food, it's their lives, their livelihood. A lot of people will just, you know, live off of selling wild rice or venison or different things they make on the res. So this mine threatens to not just destroy the water in general, but more connectedly, like their whole culture. So it's basically, we're dealing with resource colonialism, racist resource colonialism, because people can't just leave the res either. If they just leave the res shuts down and it ceases to exist. So this affects more than just indigenous people, but they're definitely, Bad River is like the most affected frontline community in this situation, as far as humans go.
And can you talk about what sort of resistance this move has had from the different communities, the different human communities, at least living in the Pinokis?
Definitely. Like I said before, it's definitely been a spectrum of resistance. There's been the last couple of years, people from the tribes and people not from the tribes were going down to Madison, going to all these joint finance committee hearings on this legislation, because up until this past March, there was a moratorium on ferrous and metallic mining within our state. So there hasn't been a lot of money or mining going on. People would have to prove that it would be environmentally sound before they'd mine. And now the laws have all changed because Go Give a Taconite went to an ALEC conference in Arizona and they had a bunch of lawyers help them figure out how to like rewrite Wisconsin's mining ledge. So there's been a lot of resistance against that. Ashland County and Iron County, that border where the Pinoki Range runs through. Ashland County already passed some legislation that asked for $100,000 and a bunch of additional fees if the mining company is in fact going to mine and gets like dust or sulfuric acid or anything on surrounding plants, which would be inevitably so. And Iron County is drafting a similar piece of legislation, but it doesn't safeguard them from mining and it doesn't safeguard them from bulk sampling, which will also blow the tiles off of the Pinoki Hills. And I guess in a different way, that's the first thing I was going to talk about just because that stuff had come first. The Lakota Ray Band of Ojibwe, utilizing their 1842 treaty rights and just what's in their heart, they have set up a harvest camp in the Pinoki Range that's directly in the way of one of the processing facilities for the tailings or waste rock or overburden from mining. So further down the road, this mine that like no one wants to happen, their camp is in the way. And then, of course, on June 11th, there was the event where allegedly people were up on the ridge disrupting bore drilling, trying to make sure that didn't happen because that threatened to get sulfuric acid in the water table. So there's a lot of different places that people have plugged in, and there's a lot of different ways that people can currently plug in. And there's a march, July, this coming Saturday. Yeah, this coming Saturday, July 13th at 1 in Hurley, a march on into GTAC's office. So with a bunch of speakers, indigenous and non.
Can you talk a little bit about Go Give a Taconite and where the company is headquarters? I imagine it's partially headquarters in Hurley for the local stuff in Wisconsin. The company is based out of Florida, though, right?
Right. So Bill Williams is the CEO of Go Give a Taconite LLC. He's from Florida. Their front or face company, Go Give a Taconite, has their base office in Hurley, Wisconsin, the Northwoods. But it is just that. It's a front. They're a subsidiary of Klein Corporations, who's had a lot of different operations in Appalachia area and the Virginias with mountaintop coal removal. So they're operating under this like multi-million dollar corporation with this like false or local front. And Bill Williams in particular, who's from Florida, he was involved in the White Pine mine back in the early 80s, where they were trying to run really janky, slow-moving trains full of sulfuric acid through the Bad River Reservation to Michigan to, like, get copper deposits out of the soil. And he was stopped back in the day. There was a blockade on the tracks with indigenous and non-indigenous folks, and they got the trains to stop. So it's the same guy back again for round two, basically.
Lovely people in this world, aren't there?
Yeah.
And also you mentioned ALEC. Next year there's going to be two conferences of ALEC. ALEC is going to meet in Oklahoma on May 2nd and 3rd, and people are organizing around that, and in Chicago on August 7th through the 9th. Can you say a few words about ALEC?
Well, I know basically a lot of people from different big corporations who have the idea of the capitalist dream and exponential growth in their mind. They go to these things to like meet with lawyers and other corporations who've been successful in expanding their business and basically try to figure out all the loopholes possible within laws to help them expand and like not get a lawsuit and like, you know, find people that quote unquote are environmental lawyers to help them get as close to breaking the law as possible without breaking the law. So basically, I think I'm speaking in really generic terms. I think it's one of the more dangerous conferences that exists because it helps these people that have nothing but money on the brain figure out how to make more and at any cost and any cost of exploitation of people and resources possible.
You've been accused by the Iron County Sheriff Department of participating in a raucous protest on June 11th of 2013 at the proposed mine site by disrupting the borehole drilling by Idea Drilling Limited Liability Corporation. This daring daytime raid by 15 Wild Ones also allegedly included the slashing of tires, dispersing of equipment, and a cell phone and camera being used for recording the event were also dispersed. Though the raiding party was masked, you're being accused of being present and participating. Can you talk about your charges and why you think that you've been targeted?
Yes, I'll try to be as helpful as I can. Basically, so the charges are from Iron County, and they have not shown as much resistance in the opposition forum to the mine as Ashland County. There's more, there's still, from what I understand, more people against the mine in that county than there is for, but there's more people for it in that county than Ashland County. And basically, yeah, they want to make an example out of someone because there is that saying, like, you can gauge the effectiveness of an action or alleged actions by the response of certain authority figures. And by the response, I would say whatever happened or allegedly happened sounds like it was effective at the time. And I can speculate that, I guess all I can do is speculate that the people that were involved and those things or alleged things were trying to be as effective as they saw necessary with the threat of these people and machinery permanently destroying the water table. Something had to be done with like the numbers and the resources that they had, so I would assume that that's what people thought was most effective. And yeah, in that realm of charges and Iron County and pro-mine and anti-mine people and trying to make an example out of somebody. Yeah, they initially issued me a citation for petty theft of a camera, and then June 21st it got amped up by the DA to robbery with force, felony E, 2 counts of criminal property damage amounting to approximately $2,500 and another misdemeanor of movable property. So basically, I feel like Iron County is trying to send the message that if anyone or anything tries to, like, get in the way of the mine, because it has state support right now, like, the law supports the mine going in and nothing opposing it, basically. They want to, like, nip that in the bud as soon as possible. So that's how I see it. I feel like it would be really more simple and predictable and tragic to speculate that I'm being targeted because I'm an anarchist, but I feel like that kind of came out after the fact. And now that someone has stated it, and I do identify as an anarchist, like, that becomes more of a real problem for me because I do think there's a black scare right now where authority figures see anarchists as a threat no matter what, without even like knowing or asking. They just hear that word and they think those people need to be quieted and shut up and put away. So I think that's why I'm being targeted more now after the fact, yes.
Well, let's hope that we really are the threat that they think that we are. And more.
Yes.
So your next court date is Monday, July 15th in Hurley, Wisconsin. What can listeners do to support you?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things you can do. If you can, in general, make it to that July 13th march, that would be even cooler. If you want to pack the courtroom for my court date, I know I'd more than appreciate that. That'd be amazing. 2:30 in Hurley, it's a small space, so even 50 people look like a big deal. There's also the PinocchioDefenders.wordpress.com. It's a general pot for legal support for anyone and everyone that gets supported on the anti-mine or side. Anyone that faces charges or gets in trouble, they will be supported through this fund. Because I'm guessing, I've been told that my bail will probably be set somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000. And then we'll go from there. So if you have some funds to donate, that's great. If you don't, doesn't mean you can't help. if you can spread the word about that Pinocchio Defenders site too, that'd be really cool. It's like a clearinghouse. We're trying to put like news on there and keep people in the know about what's going on and different events so they can like stay plugged in. And basically, it's, yeah, there's a spectrum of ways you can help. So any one of those things would be great.
And then for the folks that are in Florida, for instance, they're planning on being in Florida, there's an opportunity there to raise some ruckus and express one's dissatisfaction with Go Get Big Taconite's actions, I would imagine.
Yeah, July 13th and whenever people can do what they do. There's so many opportunities for solidarity actions and support. So, like, you don't have to be in the Northwoods of Wisconsin to be opposing the mine either.
Are there any other things you wanted to talk about?
If people can come to the Northwoods or are thinking about it but are worried they won't be supported, I want them to know that you will be supported. There is a beautiful community here, and there's a lot of folks, too. And between the Lacouderay Harvest Camp and other camps that will be probably popping up in the future, there is room for a lot of people to come up here and be a part of the struggle, or at least share the story where you are. Because we'd also, when this is all said and done, resource extraction efforts will continue. And if we can make good connections and be solid with each other, that's when we're more effective. So stay in touch. You can email folks at that pinocchidefenders@gmail.com and see how we can be effective in saving the wild places that still exist and maybe freeing some wild hearts so they can live the way they want to live.
Weird. Thanks a lot for coming on, Crow, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah. And this is Crow's post-sentence statement. My statement to 9 months in jail in conjunction with the withheld felony sentence equating to 15 years in prison if I, quote, step out of line, unquote, in the eyes of the, quote, unquote, state, was harsh and a classist attack on my beliefs and lifestyle. Judge Fox strives to kill my spirit by burying me in a dying urban hole and desires that I refrain from involvement in the anti-resource extraction struggle. I refuse to be, quote, killed, unquote, and I refuse the idea of coerced complacency. The, quote, lifestyle enforcement, unquote, aspect of my 5-year probation mandate, post-jail time, with full-time employment stipulation, is culturalist and out of touch with today's employment landscape. Innumerable individuals work seasonal jobs for life in a responsible manner. Thus, Judge Fox's ruling is based on the disappearing myth of the white American dream that supports and enforces a destructive capitalist regime. In conjunction, Judge Fox exploited my sentencing hearing to serve as a symbolic trial for my identity as an anarchist, my appearance, and my ongoing affiliation with indigenous communities, extending to my adamant stance against industrial resource extraction. This is unacceptable, yet predictable. The judge seemingly desires to stifle dissent from all things wild and free, and may as well have based his sentence off a hypothetical book in progress entitled, quote, White Pride and Prejudice, unquote, as the words fell from his mouth in a narrow, outdated, and white male privilege world perspective, and does not support or embrace hunting, fishing, or gathering. Though I am not indigenous and have never claimed to be, I am grateful and touched to have been welcomed into some of those communities and maintain that GTAC and their pro-mine affiliates are waging extreme racist resource colonialism on the land and connected peoples and creatures with the proposed Pinocchio mine, potentially the largest iron mine worldwide, as it would negatively affect frontline indigenous communities of the Northwoods bioregion in conjunction with the traditional ways. Though I wish no harm to Stacy Sari, the geologist hired on GTAC's dollar, it saddens me that she continues to despise the fiber of my being and continues to support industrial resource extraction that in turn supports death to the poorest people in rural wilderness landscapes. The cliche of, quote, just doing your job, unquote, is no excuse to participate in colonial violence via corporate resource extraction. Exploitation of the land by rich corporate entities continues to persist while perpetuating persecution of dissent to such negative acts across the globe, so resistance to these destructive activities must continue to proliferate worldwide. Various incarnations of creative resistance must be embraced to succeed in the struggle against the ongoing violence against our only home, Earth. Consequently, colonization is everywhere, so decolonization must happen everywhere. We must, quote, know our rights, unquote, and practice good security culture if we are to support our comrades and succeed in struggle. It will do us all good to prioritize organizing as communities and individuals that value consensus and the destruction of exclusionary hierarchies, holding ourselves accountable to our own standards. Also, it is important to remember who our allies are, as well as the real enemies. A Supreme Court recently ruled that it is not a police officer's job to, quote, serve and protect, unquote, only to uphold the law. The law is written by the predominantly white colonized elite 1% ruling class, and that is who the law protects. Not you, not the land, not the people of the LGBTQ community, female-bodied folks, or minorities of any kind. Thus, the law protects GTAC and their affiliates, and police remain the first line of enforcement against community resistance. We must negate repression from the state by protecting ourselves and land bases therein. We must not give our people up and recognize that to be in solidarity with one another is more akin to the idea of harmony than unity. Harmony implies that we can all do different things within the same song and still find conclusion together. We must let go of the liberal idea and notion of hope. Hope is a passive wish. I would rather assert myself and strive towards self-determination, leaving fascist hands and ideals behind. The message must be sent that public dissent will not be stifled as we are living in the 11th hour, the seventh fire, the last grab for fossil fuel resources. We will not live in the wake of corporate destruction and greed. The anti-police brutality struggles that originated in Ferguson demonstrated inspiring community organizing and resistance we can all learn from. In conjunction with the indigenous people's struggles at the Unistoten camp, 1,000 kilometers north of modern-day, quote, British Columbia, unquote, they never ceded their lands to the Canadian government and kicked out large-scale resource extractors by building a traditional village in the way of the pipeline, 5 years strong and steady. In closing, direct action is important, and we must all continue to organize creatively. Stay aware of the harms and dangers that surveillance and social media can bring. The internet is both a blessing and a curse. Spend less time obsessing over government conspiracies. Be safe and organize around tangible issues that are pertinent to your communities. In addition, for those who are interested in following the law to the T until they die, you're a hypocrite, and you're not free. Slavery was once legal. Electroshock therapy was once legal, and the nature of proposed Pinocchio mine was once illegal. Be on the side of loving common sense, as tough love takes many forms, not the side of money and fascism. Ultimately, the Pinocchio mine will never be built as it is genocide upon stolen Ojibwe land, its indigenous peoples and creatures, and their traditional ways. We should continue to use the land as if it does not belong to RGGS, leased to GTAC, as it does not belong to them. Treaties aside, if we kill the land, we kill ourselves. And this was the post-sentence statement by Katie Crow Cloth. More on that case can be found at pinocchidefenders.wordpress.com. Now for the musical selections. First up, let's hear Permaculture from Boston with their track They Advance from the Eponymous release of March 24, 2015. Next, we'll hear Audesus from Vilnius, Lithuania with the track 2 from their self-titled 2015 release.
Cause of freedom as you inflict more pain. Oh,
We're hearing Bacchus from their self-titled 2011 release. Bacchus is from Galway, Ireland, and we're hearing the track Hopeless Daggers. Next up, we'll hear Wildfell by Rule of Thirds from their self-titled album. Rule of Thirds hails from Adelaide in Australia. We'll be right back. You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3, Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio,